The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Please describe a typical 24-hour Papa Song cycle.
At hour 4, each server is woken by auto-stimulant. From revival, we proceed to the hygiena. After dressing, we file into the diner. At hour 5, we man our stations to greet the new day's consumers.
Welcome to Papa Songs.
For the next 19 hours, we input orders, tray food, fan drinks, obstacle condiments, wipe tables, and bin garbage. All done in strict adherence to First Catechism.
What is the First Catechism?
Honor thy consumer.
Hello, everyone. Another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you, barreling towards you. There's no way you can avoid it. You can try to jump out of the way, but you're just going to end up at our website, loosecannons.net, where we have all of our content, podcast, writings, videos, including the new Loose Cannons Canon 2.0 podcast and montage with some writings yet to be fully complete, but you can read at least Patrick and my thoughts about all of the movies we selected for the canon. Nice little passive-aggressive dig there.
You can read half of mine, 50%.
Yeah.
And four of mine.
Yeah. And then, of course, the four that you did on the podcast as well. You can listen to those.
Sure can.
Right. More shout-outs to our commenters. They're continuing to go at it strong, and we've added a third one named Charlie Hayden, who I don't think we've mentioned before, along with Abel Morales and Paul Wood, are all having a good time in the comments board, and you should feel welcome to join them. They are smart and good at talking about film. Also, we got a comment on the UK iTunes, apparently back in July, but we never noticed it because iTunes separates their comments based on what country you put it from. But Charlie Hayden was nice enough to point us out to it, and our UK commenter, Lord Walmer, I think, gave us about the nicest comment I've ever seen about a podcast, and pretty much summed up exactly what we're going for, even though I don't always think that we hit that mark. He made it seem like we did.
Yeah.
I'll also point out that Adam Underwood brought that to our attention too via email.
Okay.
Although I don't check the emails.
You mentioned that. I didn't know which review you were talking about when you originally mentioned that.
Yeah, he said something about the UK review. Mm-hmm. I think he was talking about that.
Yeah, one. Yeah, he was.
Yeah, there's only one. So
yeah,
it was a pretty
good one.
It's a pretty high mark that it's setting, to be honest. So if we're anywhere near that, I'm very comfortable.
Your comfort, Ilya, is our number one goal.
I know. This is all about my comfort. This whole podcast is just to make me happy.
We are your three comfort women.
Speaking of comfort, today we're going to be discussing 2012's Cloud Atlas, directed by Tom Tykwer, Lana Wachowski, and Andy Wachowski. But before we do that, we like to do this a little segment we call Heralds and Denouncements. Boop, 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 boop. Bow.
Right on.
Patrick, do you have a herald or denouncement for
us? You know, I kind of want to denounce a movie that I just saw, but I don't feel like I was that strong on it. and I've already heralded.
This isn't a mandatory segment.
Yeah, I was trying to decide. I guess I will go ahead and I guess I want to denounce the movie Son of Saul.
No.
Sorry, I saw it yesterday.
I haven't seen it yet. And, it hasn't come out here.
I actually got a ticket. A friend of mine had a ticket to AFI Fest, so they were showing it at AFI Fest here, and I got to see it in the Chinese theater on 35mm, which was pretty awesome. But I also didn't really like it.
That's where the awesomeness ends.
Yeah, it's a Holocaust movie, and it's got a weird aesthetic where it's like he only shoots everything in close-ups, so it's all just close-ups of this guy's face for the most part as he's doing things. It's like a Jewish worker in the concentration camp whose body it is to like clean the like rooms where they gas people and to like, you know, stack bodies and stuff like that. And it's heavy stuff. And I thought for a little while that it was going to go in one direction where I was like, oh, this is kind of an interesting like micro macro thing that he's got going on here. But then it abandons that for like really broad, like, oh, the tragedy. And I was just like, I'm not really that interested in this anymore.
So, too bad.
And its aesthetic was good for like the first half of the movie, and then toward the second half it started to get kind of tiring, and I felt some of it was, so he actually like breaks from that aesthetic to shoot some stuff kind of conventionally, because he does actually like cut away from the close-ups of the guy's face from time to time, and I don't know, it lost me in the last part of the movie.
Too bad.
Was that the Palme d'Or winner this year?
No, it was the one everyone said should have won instead of the movie that did.
What was the movie that did win?
I forget. It's, yeah, no one remembers. It's from some guy that,
I really hope this movie is called No One Remembers and the director is called Some Guy. That would be pretty cool.
That's too bad. I thought we were gonna have a loose cannons person denouncing a Palme d'Or winner 2 years in a row, or the Palme d'Or winner, because I denounced blue as the warmest color last year.
Yeah, it's the one that won this year is apparently called Dipan, and it's from France.
France again.
Who's France. The director?
Here we go. Here it is. Jacques.
It's directed by a ghost.
It's Jacques Audiard directed it, actually.
Yeah. So.
Directed by a ghost, yes.
That's why I won.
I want first you to work on your emotional memory. Let's do that scene again. Slower this time.
Basil.
I'm going to go ahead and herald The Wild Bunch. It's I saw it on 70mm, which was my first experience seeing a 70mm film. Although I think it's sort of cheating, because I'm pretty sure The Wild Bunch was just shot on 35 and then blown up to 70 for some screenings and stuff. But still pretty impressive. And I found the movie really enjoyable in how like ugly and sad and just grotesque everything was. Like there's even just parts where they're hanging out and someone will make like a really disgusting joke and then it cuts around to everyone laughing and their laughing is so hideous and overdone that I'm just like, ugh, these are like the worst people. And then they all just like murder each other. It's it feels like, instead of being like an elegy for the Western, it feels like Sam Peckinpah being like, the Western is already dead and all these people are just in hell reliving it. Like,
yes.
It's really nightmarish and like not pretty. Like it's like shot in places that should be pretty, but I feel like Sam Peckinpah intentionally avoids like doing really beautiful vistas or anything like that. It's just like a lot of shit getting blown up and it's really horrible the whole time. It's pretty cool.
Just a quick correction. Blue is the Warmest Color is from 2 years ago. Winter Sleep was from last year, and I was the only one who saw that, and I liked it a lot, actually. So.
Right oh, off. Right off. Score one for the Palme d'Or.
Yeah.
I didn't really see anything that I hated or loved over the past week. So, on to you, Ruben.
All right. I am excited to say that for the first time this year, I saw a 5-star movie that was not a rewatch, and it was Albert Brooks's Real Life, one of the funniest movies I've ever seen, if not the funniest. I feel like maybe it and Raising Arizona are in a dead heat for the funniest movie I've ever seen, but there are definitely parts where I laughed so hard that I was choking on my laughter in this movie. It also has a visual joke that probably happens maybe 20 times in the movie, and I laughed almost every single time that it happened, which is really impressive to me. But even beyond that, that would be enough for me to herald a movie. I actually think it's really smart and interesting about Hollywood and filmmaking in ways that even the popular reviews on Letterboxd and elsewhere aren't really getting at. They just say that's kind of a incisive criticism of the idea of reality television or, you know, documentary or whatnot. But I think it's more interesting than that, about how the idea of how film shapes reality and the idea that at a certain point, like, it's not just that you can't capture reality with film, but that if you're invested enough in film, like the Albert Brooks character is, you start to see that as reality. Which I think is a lot more interesting than just the simple idea that you can't capture reality on film. And Albert Brooks is someone who gets compared to Woody Allen a lot because they made films at the same time and they're comedians and they don't have like a really overt visual style and they're kind of neurotic and for a lot of other reasons. But I just wanted to say that Albert Brooks is much, much better, if not just for the fact that I find him funnier, but the fact that he is a lot more willing to comment on himself in a way that's not about you liking him at the end of the criticism of himself. He doesn't criticize himself so that you'll get that sort of pitying feeling for him, like Woody Allen often invokes. Like, he actually really takes himself to the mat in ways that are pretty surprisingly honest. And also is willing to just call himself Albert Brooks in this movie. So he doesn't even give himself that distance, which Woody Allen constantly does by giving himself a fictional character name rather than just calling himself Woody Allen, because he constantly plays himself. So yeah, it was really good. I recommend it very, very highly. I feel like it has a lot of smart things to say, but even if you don't care about that, but it's really a deeply funny movie.
It's really good. Sounds it was good. On my alternate list for the canon. If you guys had vetoed a couple more, it probably would have made it. So you missed out.
Well, I saw it anyway.
Yep.
we still have time to see it, so
that's true.
We haven't missed out.
There's always room on the next one.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know if anyone noticed, I didn't want to draw too much attention to it, but on this canon that I focused on mostly not white male directors, and so maybe on the next one I'll go with all white male directors to go the other way, and Howard Brooks can take the lead.
Yeah, white power canon.
And male power.
Yes.
Oh my god.
It's about time.
This is what the podcast has come to.
Why isn't there a white male canon?
Why
are we going out of our way to...
I said hashtag not all canons.
Yes.
Speaking of, Basil, why don't you give us the plot of Cloud Atlas?
Okay. I'll give it a shot.
all of the plots.
I'm very much not going to do all the plots, but or even try to. It's basically just an adaptation of a book by David Mitchell, wherein it's sort of, I guess, in the book, slowly revealed.
Not the comedian David Mitchell.
Yep.
Yep, not Peep Show's David Mitchell.
That, which I looked
that
up.
Mitchell and Webb look.
Which I looked up just to make sure.
He's a highly acclaimed author of fiction in his spare time. But, so, yeah, I guess in the book it's sort of more slowly revealed that all these characters are sort of connected and descendants of each other. And but in the movie that's forefronted very immediately and sort of quickly cross cuts between a bunch of different stories taking place over different time periods that are all sort of interconnected by the fact that the same actors are playing the characters in various forms of makeup, and it becomes a sort of treatise on human connectedness and sort of the way that history is passed down, I guess. Yeah, I mean, that's good enough. Whatever.
I will sum up all the plots.
Okay. Hell yeah. No, what do you think of this movie?
I didn't like it. I was excited about watching it, kind of, because I had rewatched The Matrix a while ago and was kind of into the Wachowskis again. And now... I mean, I wonder how much...
No, I'm not.
Well, I do still like Speed Racer a lot. I still like The Matrix a lot. But yeah, so there was a lot of issues I had with this. The most obvious issues was probably the incredibly unfortunate decision to just kind of, like, I guess, racially morph some of the actors that reoccur throughout the different scenarios. Trying to be kind of, you know, without saying that out, like, they basically put people in yellow face and, I don't know, whatever kind of faces. I'm not sure, really. I mean, I guess to make the point...
It's okay if it's an Asian actress playing a Latina woman, though.
Yeah, exactly. I mean...
That's okay, right?
Of course it is.
Or a black actress playing a white
person.
That's
why it's called minority face. It's just, like, if you're a minority doing a minority face, that cancels itself out, right? No, but I, so, yeah, that, I guess they did that in order for what Basil was talking about, to, like, show the interconnectedness of the different storylines, but I honestly didn't really feel like that added much of anything to the stories, or to the weight of the movie. I actually thought, for a movie made by the Wachowskis, it was visually really disappointing and kind of flat, and really, even like the science fiction part of it was just really, I don't know, didn't really get me at all. So, yeah, and the acting was all over the place, but I rarely actually ended up liking it, and so the emotional points which the movie really tried to hit hard at the end, didn't hit for me at all. So that's why I didn't like it.
I don't think I should like this movie, but I really do a lot. There's not really a great reason for it. I thought it was pretty, unlike Ilya, and then I thought the editing was really, really good. Like, basically the last almost like hour and 15 minutes is almost a nonstop like action scene. It kind of reminds me of something that I would do, or like Cinescape 2011, where it's like all these disconnected parts are like forming like one giant unstoppable thing, kind of like the end of Speed Racer, but almost interminably long, and not as good as Speed Racer either, because Speed Racer makes sense, whereas a lot of the times here, it's like, it's really just like the music and the editing that's pushing things forward, but I still really liked it. I didn't take like any notes because I had no idea what any of it meant, and when I did think I knew what it meant, it didn't feel particularly earned. And I agree with Ilya about the makeup. There's a play that I'll probably talk about more called Cloud Nine, I think, where halfway through the play, everyone plays different parts than what they were playing before, but no one wears any makeup or anything like that. So like a small child plays like an adult woman and stuff like that, but they don't try to disguise them. And I think that would have been a lot more interesting in this film if they didn't use all the weird makeup stuff and just like had, you know, like, I don't know. I think it would have been interesting to do some stuff like that. And it would have been cool, or at least I like that play. but yeah, I feel like that aspect of it did fail, and I agree very hard with Ilya there. Even taking out the like racial stuff, like the just the Tom Hanks and like a bunch of different makeup stuff doesn't work.
I thought this movie was okay. I think there are like I'm trying to remember like how many segments there are. I think most of the segments are just okay. There's one that is possibly good, and then there's one that's really bad. And the one that I hated the most is the one where Tom Hanks is like the future caveman. And I absolutely could not stand his like patois that he was speaking in. Like, that drove me up the fucking wall. Like, anytime that people do that in movies, I don't know why, it drives me crazy when they're just like kind of make up a new like way of saying things. When I rewatched Clockwork Orange, that was like my least favorite part of it, where they were like doing the like weird future speak. Mm-hmm. And here it's even worse. And that whole segment, I hated that whole segment.
And let's not forget Hugh Grant as the cannibal. That was pretty bad about it as well.
Hugo Weaving as the weird voodoo guy.
There were so many different things they combined in that segment that Hugo. I disliked. Like the character like having a visual representation of their dark side talking to them, and I was just like, that's dumb. And then they had a seer saying some sort of rhyme that was supposed to foretell events, and I was like, that's also dumb. Everything about that segment is dumb. I did like the 70s segment though the most of all of them. I liked Halle Berry and Keith David like running away in like leather jackets and like the cars chasing them. I thought that part was really fun.
Do you like Hugo Weaving's haircut in the 70s?
I liked a lot of things about the 70s segment, honestly. But the other stuff was just, it was just okay. And I was kind of like, I don't know. I again, like going back to the makeup, I felt like the amount of makeup used in this was just irresponsible. It was just like, I was like, there is no need at all for that much makeup on everybody in every scene. Like, I'm pretty sure
they all got one scene story where they just look normal.
Yeah. But again, I was like, why did you put Duna Bay in makeup to make her look like a white lady with red hair in the 19th century or whatever? I was like, that seems so weird. And like, why did you make Jim Sturgis a Korean person in the future? Like, why? I didn't understand, like, I don't know. I just didn't understand, like, all the just crazy nose makeup everybody had. Like, there was so much makeup just, like, in this area of their face. And I was just like, it looks terrible. Don't do that.
Basil?
Yeah, I'm with everyone except for Ruben. Sorry. On paper, I feel like I should agree with Ruben that the editing is really cool, because it's like the thing that I mean, it's what I like about editing. It's what I wrote about point blank, like this kind of associative rather than literal editing. But I felt like most of the cuts were driven by like such an obvious like story beat thing that's like tying them together, like one person in danger, and then it cuts to another person in danger in a like similar situation, and there's all kinds of ways that they did that it felt, because it's not so much like the Cinescape where it's someone pulling from a bunch of different media and forming associations based on visual rhymes and stuff like that, that it felt like the script was just engineered with all those cuts in it that it felt really like constructed, like too constructed to me, versus I think that Point Blank really does sort of offer this thing that feels a little bit the way that Memory does, where you're kind of like floating in space and one thing kind of leads to another in a like sort of free form way. This movie felt like so rigid, and it's like this beat, then this beat, then this beat, that I couldn't get into it. And for a while, I was just like, well, this isn't particularly good, but it's okay. But then for the last hour, I was like, this movie is so long, and I hate how all of these stories are concluding. So I ended up on the side of like hating it kind of a lot, because I was really irritated with, like, I mean, I went into it because there was a big controversy with the makeup and everything. So I'm like, well, I'm just going to like walk in and like sort of try to give it a pass on that and just be like, maybe it's going to be a good movie in spite of this like really big weird gaffe. But even ignoring the makeup, I didn't like it very much at all. And I actually thought that the worst segment was Jim Broadbent escaping from a mental hospital.
I absolutely agree.
I hated every scene with that.
That was so bad.
Hugo Weaving as Nurse Ratched. I mean, Hugo Weaving is terrible in this movie. Every single sequence.
He's always bad.
Yeah. But he's like
the
worst parts of Agent Smith, like cranked to 11 in every single scene. And he plays a villain in every single sequence. I was like, give him like one time where he's not just like chewing the scenery, like, bruh. Like even the Jim Sturgis, like, 1700s one. I was like, oh, he's not going to be the villain. But then he's like, we're going to join the abolitionists. And he's like, what?
Okay. So I guess I have to respond to all of these things as best as I can. So
sorry. I mean to put you on the spot.
With the makeup, again, I said that I agree, but I definitely give the Wachowskis more of a pass because they're so idealistic and like sincere and weird that I think that there's like an idea that people can just become like entirely different people and that we can like move past all that stuff and everyone's connected. And I feel like they really made a misstep in calculating, but at least I know where they were coming from and why they did it. And like, I understand, I don't agree with them, and I think that they should move past that idea that they have. But at least I understand. As far as what I said the editing goes, I didn't mean the editing as in terms of between the different segments. I actually mean the internal editing of the segments themselves is really well done. Like when I was watching the futuristic fight scenes, I kept thinking about how disappointing the fight was, the big one, like the roller jet roller skates or whatever, and Jupiter Ascending, and how boring it was to watch and how much more exciting this was. For me, and then there was a third point that y'all made.
I actually disagree with the Jupiter Ascending scene. Yeah,
that was
actually my favorite part of Jupiter Ascending, was the rollerblades.
I mean, I think technically it might be my favorite part too. the Jim Broadman escaping the mental hospital part. Like, I sort of agree in that, like, I don't think that they did a really good job in doing it. But again, I sort of like the idea of it, like the idea that every single other story is like this huge, enormous thing, like civilizations dying, a nuclear power plant being allowed to go off. And then there's this like little story about a guy who owes some money to like a small hood. And then he's trying to escape from a mental hospital to get back to his lost love. And the fact that it's like put on equal footing to me is like kind of funny, and like the idea that like, I don't know, that it's comparable, or that these little moments can be comparable to these epic immense things, was something that I liked. And I especially liked that it was made into a movie where he was like, in his head he was like, you know, I can't remember who he said, but like Cary Grant, Laurence Olivier with a bit of someone else. And then it's like old gross Tom Hanks with like old gross makeup or whatever, playing him in the movie. And then like the funny like trailer or whatever. But anyways, now I've responded to all three of the points, so we can get back to hating it.
I think in the context,
I would like to point out that I don't hate the movie. I'm in the middle on it. I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
I'm not on the side of hate, just for reference, guys.
Yeah, no, we got the whole
yeah.
gamut.
Yeah, but Basil really was making it like a yeah. all right, we're against you thing, and I'm kind of in the middle on this, so.
Well, I think with the broadband thing, I agree with you that I guess if you take it as like a joke on how writers seem to pit themselves as like and like imagine their own stories as much grander than it really is, like that's kind of, I guess, you know, that's cool, but no way is that worth suffering through that whole segment and listening to Jim Broadbent talk about ruddy duddy all the time. Like the 10th time I heard it, I wanted to just throw my computer out the window because it was so bad and so annoying. And so I guess I feel like with a lot of about this movie is like, yeah, I see what you're coming from, the Wachowskis are probably, you know, idealistic visionaries and stuff like that. But
I wouldn't call them visionaries. Idealistic yes.
people with like, you know, weird ideas.
I would I would say that their ideas are quite old, in fact, and maybe it's time to update them.
Yeah. And so the ideas are also relatively simple and sort of like not worth talking like for so long over. I mean,
I didn't notice the movie's length at all. So there's that.
I definitely did, yeah.
I would say that the middle hour for me worked well enough that I didn't notice how fast it was going, but then when I came back to it, I was like, oh man, this is going forever.
When I checked on it, I was like, oh wow, there's only an hour left. Like, when I checked it first, I was like, oh, it's a 3-hour movie. I was like, this is going to be a pain. But then when I checked again, there was only an hour left, and I was like, wow, only an hour left?
Yeah.
I don't have any notes about this movie, though, so I don't know what I'm going to say about it. I could just keep responding to whatever y'all say.
That's fair.
I don't have any notes.
I assumed that Basil took a lot of notes since he didn't like it.
I did take a lot of notes.
Classic Basil.
But I'll go on Ruben's side as far as the editing. Like, I think it's a well-edited movie, and I actually think that some of it is well shot too. I don't think that it's,
I think a lot of it's really well shot.
I especially like the sequence where the writer, Mr. Frobisher, is on the top of, I think it's Notre Dame or someplace, some big cathedral, where he's waiting for, you know,
I think he's in England still, so
is he still in England?
I would assume not Notre Dame.
Some big sort of Gothic cathedral where he's sitting on top waiting for his love to come meet him, and you know,
he's not waiting for him to come meet him.
Well, he's waiting,
enjoying
for him to come.
His last sunrise.
Well, yeah, he's waiting for him to come, and so he could just see him one last time, I guess.
No, he didn't necessarily know that he was going to come. He just wanted to enjoy the sunrise like one last time before he killed himself.
Oh, I thought he was actually like waiting and just like hiding and watching him.
No, he says like the only thing that like could have made this morning more perfect, or the only thing that made this morning even more perfect than like I expected it to be, or something like that, was seeing your dumb trilby, which just like looks really awful, but I enjoy.
Yeah, I liked that sequence. I liked the way that was shot, and I also liked the sequence of Jim Broadbent as the old conductor, sort of like composing that first piece of music with him. Where he's giving him all the instructions about, you know, where to put the notes and everything.
Yeah, I would actually say that sequence in general is probably my favorite of the movie. I don't know.
I thought that was a little Good Will Hunting-y. Yeah. For me.
I don't know.
How so?
He doesn't know the technical names, but he can just play. He just, you know, he's got this genius or something like that, and then I don't know the...
Oh, like, I didn't even pick up on that. I thought that he was just, like, joking around or something. Like, I thought he was just, like, having a laugh, and then he's like, ah, I'm going to show him, and then it turns out he really can or something. But your explanation makes more sense.
I could see that. But that was another segment I thought in general was okay. I thought the I think it's like 1800s or whatever, where he's on the ship. I thought that was okay. I actually liked
that segment up until the part where Tom Hanks declares that he's poisoning him.
Yeah.
To an empty room. He's like, I want to get your gold, so I'm poisoning you. And I was like, we already knew that. You didn't need to say it out loud. Yeah. Just to us, really. Not to this dying man. Yeah.
I didn't really like any of Tom Hanks' performances in this, though.
He's so bad in this movie. He's not as bad as
he was very Tom Hanks-y.
He's the second worst actor, for sure.
But I thought that segment was okay. And I thought Jim Broadbent escaping from the mental hospital was okay, too. And the future stuff was also okay.
I see a theme. I see a recurring theme. I was like, I see
what you're going for. I see what you're going for. And I'm happy that you're swinging for the fences. It's not necessarily for me, you know. But and the makeup's a little distracting and egregious. But other than that, you know, I don't have a huge complaint except for that stupid, you know, future caveman scene. That whole sequence is just, like, everything about it annoyed me.
Did you not like how Hugo Weaving looks like he's out of a bad Tim Burton movie?
I mean...
like, he so easily could have been Johnny Depp in a bad Tim Burton movie.
I believe that 100%.
Still like that better than the Jim Broadbent sequence.
That made me uncomfortable.
Yeah, that was uncomfortable for sure.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Future racism is still the same as.
Oh my god.
Olden day racism.
And I also didn't like. It seemed like there were points in the movie where they used racial slurs that were unnecessary. There's a part where in the '70s segment when Hugo Weaving calls Duna Bay's character the horrible slur for a Latino person. I was just like, why is that necessary? We already know he's a bad guy. He shot her dog. Like, we know why she hates him specifically.
Shoot the dog moment.
That. It's basically like they just need that to have that joke later where she says that to him after she hits him on the head. And I was just like, that's not funny. Yep. And you just should not terrible. Put that in the movie.
I mean, the part about that sequence, about that whole storyline with Halle Berry as the journalist, which I like best, was when Keith David breaks into her apartment and she holds a knife. Oh, yeah. She holds a knife to his throat, and he's like, "I knew your father. Look at this picture right next to my face that you're holding my head against. I'm the guy on the far right of that picture."
I didn't even notice that. I didn't even notice it was right by his head.
How fucking fortunate was that?
I thought you were going to say a different thing, which I really liked, which was like, you know, he says, if I wanted to kill you, I already would have. And then she says the exact same thing to him.
Yeah.
And she's like, is that a great way to introduce yourself to people? And I was like, you know, that's true. Why do people always say that?
Yeah.
Like, and why are people like, oh, makes sense. I trust you now.
I mean, the part with the photo almost felt like they were actually doing a joke, because like usually in this sort of situation,
such a weird bad Photoshop job too. Like,
it's really like, bad. Yeah.
Obviously not Keith David.
But I definitely like the clothes and the costuming and the lack of makeup. But best of all about that sequence. So actually, I think I agree with Patrick. That was one of my favorite ones.
Like, I appreciate the Wachowskis' sincerity, but I feel like this movie would have been a lot better if it was a lot less self-serious. I feel like moments like that are so close to parody, and also, like, weird, like, bald Tom Hanks in the future, like, as the, like, burly, like, really mean writer guy, I was like, oh, like, you know, he's, like, doing that ridiculous, like, English accent, like, and then he throws the critic off the roof. I was like, that's a weird, like, almost joke. Why is that in the movie?
Yeah, I didn't like that scene at all.
I didn't understand that. I was like, why have Tom Hanks play that character? Like,
because everyone's really connected, man.
Oh, boy.
Yep. I like the future sequence the best. for sure. And then
Neo Soul, it was the coolest looking. Yeah. I wish the whole movie just took place there. Some of it's just ripping off Blade Runner, but it looked really cool for the most part.
I liked a lot of the action in that. Then probably the 70 sequence next most.
Let's rank them, everybody.
What else was there? There's the escape from the hospital, the caveman part. Oh, the slave ship, slave plantation, next most. Then escape from the hospital, and then caveman, least.
What about the composer one?
Oh, above slave ship, below 70s. Because I like the ending of it a lot, but the beginning not so much.
Oh, I didn't like the ending. I had the opposite reaction.
I would definitely say the 70 sequence would be first. I think the composer would be second, actually, for me. Then the future, the escape from the mental hospital, the slave ship, and then the caveman.
All right, Ilya, I guess we're doing this. I was just joking.
Yeah, all right. Fair enough. Well, you go first.
All right, I'm going.
And possibly remember all these sequences.
Yeah, I'm going with, I guess, the, composer one first, then, I guess, the neo-soul thing, just because I like the way it looked, and then the 70s, and then, the slave ship, and then the, caveman one, and then going with Jim Broadbent.
Okay.
The mental hospital at the bottom.
So totally like caveman one best.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh my god.
Totally.
We just got pwned.
Gotcha there. No, it's actually pretty simple for me. 70s I liked, and everything else I didn't. So.
Still got to rank them. I didn't like
everything else
any
ties
of them.
For last.
Okay.
It's hard for me too.
Yeah. Okay. Like all right. All right. Fine. So then it's 70s first. God, I really don't like a lot of any of these. I would say, I guess future second. Even though I didn't really like the action sequences there, I thought. I liked some of it. I liked the interior design sort of thing that they did in it. That was kind of funny. And then the composer one was terrible too. I don't know. Composer. Mental hospital.
What about the magic slave one?
Magic slave. Jesus. Man, this is painful. And then, so composer, then I guess, would I put the slave ship? No, actually, after composer, I would put the Tom Hanks, Halle Berry, caveman thing after the composer. And then I would put the slave ship, and then I would put the mental hospital thing. Did I miss anyone? Maybe. But I actually didn't think that the Tom Hanks, Halle Berry one, Halle Berry caveman one was nearly as awful as some of the other ones, actually. I thought...
I liked all of them.
Whenever they weren't talking, I thought that was actually kind of cool. I thought actually Tom Hanks looked pretty cool in that weird outfit with the... And everybody... And the makeup actually made sense in it. Like, I don't know. Having all these weird tattoos on their faces and stuff like that. At least it kind of worked in a way to like, okay, maybe this is how, like, they would, I don't know what they would do. But the makeup in the future sequence didn't make any sense for me. And the makeup in some of the other ones also didn't. But there, I guess it sort of worked. It was still
One of my two or three complaints about the future one, which was definitely my favorite, is that it made three of the people look very similar. Hugo Weaving, I don't know their names, but the other,
Jim Sturgis.
Like, Yeah, Jim Sturgis, who was the one who was helping her, and then also the guy at the end, the one who is mind, apparently she changes, also kind of looks.
Yeah, he's Jim the one who plays the other guy's lover and the composer one.
Yeah. Sixsmith. Yeah,
I don't know that actor's name, though. Should have looked it up.
I think he was Q in the new Bond movies. Mm.
Ben Whishaw? Is that him? I don't know.
Ben Whishaw.
That sounds like it.
Yep. So yeah, they were so heavily made up in that one that all three of them kind of looked similar. Like, the only difference I could tell between Jim Sturgis's character and this other guy was that he didn't have any hair.
Yeah. I feel like that was
the I also really didn't like when they had sex.
He looked like the same person.
Yeah.
Oh, did you say you did not, or you did like it when they had sex?
I did not like when...
Yeah, I didn't like that either.
The replicant and that guy had sex. I felt like that was a really easy way to conclude.
I said, you mean fabricant?
Yeah, fabricant. This is different from Blade Runner.
Did you like when you found out that Soylent Green is people?
I thought that was funny. You didn't like
that? That was a funny joke, though. I agree. Even though, I guess it's...
No, I mean, like, in the future or whatever. Is that a joke?
Yeah, I was thinking of when Jim Broadbent is yelling it at the people in the hospital.
I thought it was pretty funny, actually.
No, I like that part, but then I didn't like the fact that it paralleled it by having them literally eating each other in that future segment.
Yeah, that didn't make any sense either, because it's not like... a money-saving thing.
Yeah, I didn't get that at all. Like, it's like the worst possible way to, like, use, like, the Matrix, like, to recycle the Matrix idea for, like, why? There was, and they, like, hung, like, I don't know, like, pigs or whatever. That looked so, it was such a gross sequence, and it was just, like, for a weird, like, not even, it didn't even have any, like, did they do anything with that information? Like, nothing. Didn't. Well,
they put the signal out there. It's like Serenity.
It was just like, okay, this is why you need to say the speech, right? So it's just like, oh, look, that's what they're doing, bad things. Like, they could have just showed anything else that was horrible happening, but they decided to show it this way. I didn't like that at all.
Yeah, and they broadly hinted at it earlier when they're like, so, they called it, I can't remember what they called it, like, you know.
Something religious, just like they call
it. Yeah, they give it like a rule.
Yeah,
so some like religious, you know, thing, and then everyone was like worshiping it, and it's like, well, this is obviously what's happening here. That something bad happens to them behind that door.
Yeah, yeah.
But you gotta give them hope, otherwise they won't put up with being squirted with ketchup on their backs. That was so gross.
Yeah.
That was really gross.
I mean, I guess that's like, I don't know. Yeah, I feel like that's an interesting idea that's been explored by other stuff and would be relevant to, like, as a satirical thing that, you know, we're becoming so dissociated from each other as human beings that we could reach a point where we just, like, make robots for the sake of abusing them. But, it's so broad because there's only a few minutes for them to get that point across before they're on to the next point, but they don't, like, so it's just, like, we get scenes of, like, grabbing asses leading to, like, bending her over the table and squirting her up and down her back, and I was like, this is gross.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of want to read the book.
Kind of.
I've heard it's very good. A professor recommended it to me, and I bought it and then left it at my girlfriend's house, and then she threw it away along with all my other stuff.
Aw.
Boo.
No, it's fine. Like, I told her she could because it was either that or she had to pay a bunch of money to ship it to me, and I was like, I don't care about that stuff that much.
I think, what was I going to say? Oh, I was going to say about the music, like the song that sort of runs through the whole thing.
The Cloud Atlas Sextet.
Yeah, I didn't think it was that great, honestly. It was kind of middle of the road. I was like, it's okay, I guess. It's not like a masterpiece or anything.
So that's okay, too?
Yeah, just okay.
What do you expect from like a movie or whatever that like they've just been saving this really great song for their whole career? They're like, once we have enough money, we're gonna make this great movie. We've been saving this masterpiece song.
Yeah, right? I mean, like, I think that's a problem when you write that into a story though, that has a piece of music that's supposed to like blow people away.
Yeah, that's,
and then you just
Tom Tykwer, you know, for you. I think it's his music. Yeah, I think he did the music, right? He usually does the music to his movies. So I wouldn't put it past him to actually think of himself as a great composer, because he's been scoring his movies all of his, I think, since Run Lola Run or whatever.
Yeah, that's the only movie of his that I've seen. So
yeah,
I was going to say I thought that the song was pretty good and way better than...
I thought it was fine.
What usually happens, because I was going to say most movies, it's usually writing, but like someone's writing a great book or like a great whatever, and then like you get a little excerpt of it and it's always like a terrible sounding book. Like it's always really bad writing. So I was like, compared to how this usually happens, this is a pretty okay song. Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like a lot of movie scores, obviously, but I don't know if any, like, even the best movie scores hold up, you know, compared to, like, really great classical music or something.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I'm not going to put Once Upon a Time in the West compared to, like, Vivaldi's Four Seasons.
Well, I don't know. I really do like that. Specifically, yeah, that's a really good movie score, and I've actually seen people like rank that among like best classical pieces because it is.
I think those people are wrong.
Well,
Ilya does too. It's a pretty good one. Even like that score.
Huh?
Once Upon a Time in the West.
Yeah, I like that score.
Oh, I thought you said you didn't like it.
I mean, I think it's still like, over the top. Yeah, I think I like it, but I think it's like one of Morricone is probably most overrated things he's ever done. I think he's done much more cool stuff, but I still like it.
Okay.
I remember writing it in my review that it was his most overrated thing, but I've heard
recent scores, like, I mean, I thought the score to Gravity, I mean, a lot of people, I guess you think it's overwrought or whatever, but I thought the score to Gravity was maybe the best part of the whole thing, and that was one of the reasons I still like. Anytime I watch even a piece of it and I hear that, I'm just like, oh my god, it's that feeling again. Like,
I kept waiting.
Again, even though I disagree, like, that's not my disagreement here. It's that, like, the visual and acting component are so associated with it. I think you're putting more on the music than, like, it's just... We don't have the same level of composer, first of all, and they're not, you know, like, they have to, like, do these things in like 2 months or whatever, like make the music. And I mean, I guess there are stories or whatever about Beethoven writing a symphony like before, like 20 minutes before he goes on stage, but it's definitely not the norm when it comes to writing like a great piece of music.
I suppose that's true too.
I kept waiting for
people who just spend all day writing music, I guess,
for the 70s segment to have like a disco scene where someone would replay that Cloud Atlas theme, but like in a weird
the disco version.
Disco version. That would have been good. I really like Halle Berry looked great in that 70s sequence.
Yeah,
it looked really awesome.
That 70s sequence.
I wanted that to be like a cop show. Like Halle Berry's the tough reporter who gets the answers, and Keith David's the, you know, the cop who's taking too much shit or whatever. Or, you know, he's like a hitman, isn't he? He's not even a cop in this. I forget that he's actually
a mole.
Yeah. Oh, who is he work
Hugh Grant
for?
Hugh thinks that he's
he's the head of security at
at the company
at the nuclear power plant.
Yeah. And I guess that was
what a bad idea though. Like, it wouldn't get out if an oil company, like, let a nuclear reactor explode and, like, kill a million people.
I didn't really think about that one too much. I feel like that was Hugh Grant's most believable performance of all of them, was the oil guy.
Oh, he's so slimy.
That was Hugh Grant playing himself,
yeah,
basically.
He's good at that.
It's this the second time we've had Hugh Grant in a movie on here. Going all the way back to Lair of the White Worm.
His first and his last performance. Because Hugh Grant was sadly run over by a dump truck after Cloud Atlas was released.
Well, at least we could see the full range of his of his acting in one movie.
Makeup.
Yeah. From cannibal to head of a nuclear power corporation.
Was he a cannibal in that Tom Hanks Halle Berry thing?
Yeah, he's like the leader of the cannibals, yeah. The one that slits Jim Sturgess's throat in the very beginning.
Yeah, I didn't know it was him, but I watched all of the credits. Oh.
It says it in the credits.
And the credits like, shows wow. You who everyone cool. plays everyone. Yeah.
I mean, I was sometimes trying to guess, sometimes I wasn't. Like, like this is dumb.
Yeah, sometimes I was like, is that Hugo Weaving?
In my opinion, they didn't go far enough. Like, they should have only used those 8 actors to play every role or whatever.
That would have
been... Oh, my God.
Good idea. And all the extras, too.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Every role. Like, the children.
Some, like,
oh, man.
Captain America stuff, just CG Susan Sarandon's face on that little girl.
Yes, exactly.
Just have all the old people be the actors in makeup.
Yep. Like, yep. Like, Jim Sturgess wasn't really in that story, in the old people story, so just make him, like, the old lady, or the guy who keeps saying, I know, over and over again.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Why not?
Or make him the cat that he holds in front of his dick during the flashback thing.
That was the best part of the movie.
That was,
That part was so bad.
The CG cat. Oh, man, that CG cat took him apart.
Good thing she's, widowed or whatever, so he could... come back and reclaim that lost love.
Maybe not. Maybe he just forces the husband out of there.
Yeah.
We don't know. It's never sure.
That's true.
That would be the best if there was, like, a different heist that he had to pull off to, like, force the husband out of her life. There we go.
Sorry I never called you out of embarrassment.
I mean,
guy's just ruining everything.
I do have to say, like, even though I didn't like this movie, I do think it's kind of cool that the Wachowskis tried, and Tyker, I guess, tried to make this work somehow. I think it's cool when filmmakers do, like, ambitious stuff, which is not just about, like, how cool they are, like, calling attention to itself for how, like, it's all in one shot or whatever, or it's all, like, I don't know. Like, they did try to fuse a lot of different styles and a lot of different things in one, and obviously that's really difficult to do. But yeah, I don't know. I didn't like get out of this thinking like I'm never gonna watch a Wachowski movie again. Blah 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 blah. Like, it's bullshit. I mean, I think I would still, even though I haven't watched Jupiter Ascending yet, and I think y'all did and y'all didn't like it, so I'm gonna go in there pretty. Not expecting a lot. I'm still going to be excited about.
I just thought it was boring.
More stuff that they put out.
Yep, I'm still going to watch Sense8. It's the only thing of theirs I haven't seen.
I
definitely liked the central idea at the heart of Jupiter Ascending. But yeah, I didn't think its execution was great.
What is the central idea at the heart of Jupiter Ascending?
I think it's similar to this, actually. It's that, you know...
Women need weird...
No spoilers!
...to love?
For me.
No. I think it's that, you know, it's some of it's about, like, reincarnation and how people are all connected, and some of it is kind of a Buddhist idea of, like, being happy isn't, you know, having all of this wealth or having all this, the owning all the planets or whatever. It's, you know, you can still be the ruler of the universe or whatever she is, and, you know, clean toilets and still have a happy life doing that. And I was like, that's kind of an interesting way to look at, like, an action adventure movie. Like, to that be the ending of the character, like where she ends up. I was like,
la 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 la.
I think I might like Hugo Weaving's villains in Cloud Atlas more than the guy who won an Oscar for Stephen Hawking's villain.
Eddie Redmayne. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, there were people that were sitting behind me that were like laughing every time he came on screen, just like maniacally at what he was doing. And I was like, I don't really blame them. Like, I'm not mad at them. I understand why they're laughing.
Mitchell really likes that performance. It was his favorite part of the movie.
Does he also like him in the Stephen Hawking movie?
I don't think he saw it, but probably not.
I doubt it.
I think he likes it just because it's pitched at such a ridiculous, like, comic book level or whatever.
It's obviously a choice.
Like, he's not just, like, doing
based on those two roles, I hate Eddie Redmayne as an actor. Just, like, completely.
I hate his next project, too, without even seeing it.
It's so ridiculous that I can see somebody like going completely the opposite direction and be like, it's so over the top, I love it. Like, it's not tepid.
Making villains do this.
It's not tepid by any means. It's not like, oh, he didn't care. It was like, he was trying something and he was swinging for the fences, but it's definitely not for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure I've seen Hugo Weaving in Lord of the Rings, but I guess maybe that doesn't count either. But the only things I've seen Hugo Weaving in are Wachowski movies, so.
Not true. You've seen him in Babe.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a while ago, though. It's been a while.
He doesn't have a big part in Babe, though.
Yeah, he does. He's like the third or fourth biggest character. It's like Babe, Fly, the Farmer Hoggett, and then Hugo Weaving as the other dog.
Is that how the...
I don't remember his name.
Is that how the...
You didn't really see him.
Okay, yeah, okay. No, it's just his voice. Okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking that he played one of the like humans in the movie. And no, I was like,
the
I don't remember
Barons, seeing him in there.
No, he's the meaner dog who takes a long time to come around to like
right.
Babe.
I think I don't know. Are we counting voice acting roles for actors too?
Anyway,
it's a little bit different. It's a little bit of a different thing, though.
So yeah, my point was, I'm not sure if this is really just Hugo Weaving being like, I don't know, bad, or if it's the Wachowskis kind of pushing him to a weird level, because he seems to like a lot of his roles do seem pitched at the same sort of extreme. I don't know, like even Agent Smith is extreme in a lot of ways, like just how he elongates every single word he says. Like, I don't know, it's like, I can't imagine that was like he just started doing that and they were like, huh,
Mr. Anderson,
that's an interesting choice, let's just keep doing that. I'm pretty sure they just think.
How can you make a phone call if you don't have the ability to speak?
So I figured out something else that Hugo Weaving has given his voice to. He was also the voice of Megatron in the Transformers movie.
And he was
movie.
Red Skull in the first Captain America.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot about that. I did not like that movie. Maybe I should check out The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert instead.
I watched that on Broadway once.
Maybe that'll be a different thing.
You'll get to hear his Australian accent at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's like Rosamund Pike. He sounds better in his native accent.
Maybe.
Babe is right before The Matrix, and basically every movie that I look at after The Matrix, it's hard for me to imagine him playing anything else besides a variation of Agent Smith.
He definitely does that in this movie.
So, oh, sorry, Babe, Pig in the City is right before The Matrix.
Yeah.
But watch some of those other 90s movies that he was in to see if I can do anything else.
Yep.
But, you know, that villain over-the-topness does work in Speed Racer, although I think that dude's a better actor. And I like the way that he's like spitting all the time, like from anger.
Yeah.
It's also a much less serious movie, so it's more easy to have fun with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think good news for y'all. You
that episode of Angel instead of this. Same idea.
Which episode of Angel?
The one where he talks about what matters and, you know, how you live your life and whatnot. Because I feel like at the very end of this movie, they spell it out like that when he's like, what are you doing this for? Don't you realize you're just a drop in the ocean? And she's like... What is the notion but a multitude of drops?
No.
Yeah.
You didn't like that moment?
That was...
I sure didn't.
That was weird.
Yeah. I mean, it fit in with the overall...
Oh, sure.
...thing of the movie, for it's sure.
You didn't like them, like, setting up the response on, like, a T-ball? Like a t- So what I was started to say was, I think you'll be glad to hear that unlike, that disco movie, you did not embarrass me into lowering my grade this time.
Yeah.
Hey.
I did feel guilty about that.
Lowering your grade by half a star?
Mm-hmm. For that. Yeah, I still really like it. That movie's fun. Yeah.
That's cool.
Jeff Goldblum is really fun in that movie.
He sure is.
Might be my favorite Jeff Goldblum performance.
That's pretty cool Jeff Goldblum performance to ever reference to anybody, because people just never know what you're talking about, probably.
Bye, Patrick.
And that will be on them.
Sorry, my...
And yeah, no.
Sorry, my computer... crashed. I don't know what happened. Google crashed on my computer for whatever reason.
Okay.
Sorry. We were still podcasting.
Yep. Podcasting on my phone.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, the whole time I was watching this movie, like, I kept thinking, like, how many, like, dumb story things were going on, and how, like, the themes were either super, super hidden or, like, way on the surface. And I was like, I don't care. I really like looking at this movie. I really like how everything's edited. So,
yeah, I like the look of it too, actually. I was like, I wonder if Ruben will like this movie because it looks good. Glad I was right.
But yeah, you know, sort of all the complaints that you brought to the surface, I agree with. But it wasn't why I liked the movie, so it didn't really affect my ranking.
That's fair.
I thought a lot of the CG stuff was really cool and good looking, unlike CG stuff is normally.
Yeah. Although, I mean, I feel like walking around with, like, a mechanical skywalk really almost never comes in handy, and, like, a jetpack or something probably would have helped them escape a lot easier.
Yeah. But it wouldn't have set up that awesome shot for the trailer where, like, he grabs her hand and, like, pushes her off one side so that the laser beams go between them. Yeah. I don't know. I used to really like the movie Serenity, and then I didn't the last time that I watched it. And when I was watching this, the future segment, I was like, cool, I can like Serenity again. This is just a version of Serenity that I like. Yep.
Truncated and less ugly looking.
Yeah. And also, I like the idea that, like, there are people who die in Serenity. I won't give away who, but, like, in this instance, everyone dies. Like, which I like better.
Mm.
Like, they sort of get to be more heroes by some of them, like, not dying.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I also like the feature segment most after
more
the
than most.
More than most of the others. Yeah, because I also agreed that it had, like, I don't know, I think it was more rounded as a story, and I actually felt like I connected to the main character more than most of the others in most of the other stories. And that's why the emotional payoff at the end was like, felt, I don't know, more earned to me than any of the others, or more most of the others.
Yeah, I think I actually might have liked the 70s segment the most if it didn't have the Tom Hanks section, because it doesn't really do
What about
anything.
When he gets blown up?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Part? Like, and it does a really weird thing where it like goes into his thoughts, which is like, and is like, oh, I just met her, but I think I'm in love with her, and then just exploding plane, and I'm like, what?
Yeah. Actually,
I like how, yeah, like he's like tried to make the other guy look like a suicide, and then like, you know, Halle Berry, they like just pushed her car, and again, it could seem like an accident, but then Tom Hanks, he just blew up an entire plane filled with people to get rid of him.
Yeah, that was really weird.
They blame it on the PLO, so.
That works.
Would have worked.
No. Actually, I forgot that one of the scenes I like best in the whole movie was, again, in that 70s segment, was in the elevator with Halle Berry and the older guy. That was pretty cool. Smith. I really like the scene where the elevator just stops and they're just hanging out in that elevator forever in different parts. And I also liked how the movie kind of was like, there's a scene where Halle Berry sort of like takes her shirt off, and then you see like the older guy looking at her, like kind of leering at her, and like, but then he's just like looking at that weird tattoo she has on her shoulder, and he's like, what is that weird tattoo? And it's like that, I guess maybe I've just like, this is just too much porn probably, that I've like, I'm clearly already like, I don't want to know where this is going.
Two people in an elevator.
Two people in an elevator. Uh-oh.
Tensions rising.
Yep. But yeah, I actually like that scene a lot.
I also like that scene. I even like his weird over the top ending in the elevator when he's like asking her how far she would go as a journalist.
Yeah, I like that too. It was kind of funny.
Anyone else? Any more thoughts on Cloud Atlas?
I think I'm good. I got it.
Yep.
Yeah, I think I've thought all of the thoughts that I want to think about this movie.
You've thought all of the thoughts.
Yep. It was okay.
Would you say that the thoughts were okay?
Yeah, they were okay. Thoughts were kind of okay. It's whatever. It's like room temp soup.
Okay. I should probably go to the landlord and tell them about
your, about your.
And also, they owe me money, so yeah. See if I can get my money back.
Yeah.
Nice.
You should, do that.
You should shout at them like the landlord in Spider-Man 2, but you're the tenant shouting at the landlord.
Rent!
Rent!
Oh, man. I wish I disliked that character in Spider-Man 2 because he's such an obvious, broad, stereotype joke, but I still laugh.
Every time.
Like the part when he goes to use the bathroom,
sitting on the
and then like he, yeah, and, no, and then he like cuts in front of Peter Parker, and then he opens the door as if to say like, you can use the shower if you have the rent. He's like, rent, and then Peter Parker just closes the door for him.
Yep.
That movie's a lot funnier than this one.
Yeah.
Sure is.
True.
That movie's a lot funnier than most movies.
Also true.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. I hope that y'all are enjoying it. As always, you can help us out by subscribing to it using to your podcast listening app and writing us a 5-star review, especially if you're going to write a really nice one like that UK listener. And if you do, maybe give us a heads up if you're from another country so that we can look at it, because apparently it only shows us the U.S. ones. So if you're in Argentina or China or Australia and listening to our podcast, give us a heads up on the website that you've written us a nice review so we can give you a shout out on the podcast. We really appreciate it. And we're really, you know, even though we've gone from like 30 subscribers to like 60, we're really enjoying seeing the gains that we've made. As Basil said, we do this no matter what because we love talking about movies. But we're really glad that other people out there are enjoying what we're making as well.
Absolutely.
Yes, we are. Thanks, y'all.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye, guys. See you later, guys. I'm gonna go to the bathroom.